Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Deep Dive with me, Stephen and Otelli. Today we're going to sink our teeth into another rather hot topic, I think.
That's correct. Something that a lot of you will be familiar with. It's about rising rent and how it is affecting businesses. Because I'm not sure if you've heard of one of the patisseries that closed down recently.
Right.
It's called Flo Patisserie. It's actually located in Siglap. And do you know the landlords actually jacked up the rental by how much? I mean, just guess.
I don't know. 10%? 15%?
A whopping 57%.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And that's what we're asking with all these big rental changes, you know, not just the small boys, but the big ones are also feeling the pinch. Mm-hmm. You know, some big companies like Kinokuniya have also downsized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how did we get here? And is the commercial rent in Singapore getting out of control? Or is it just market forces and it's the way it should be? Ethan, perhaps you can start off by helping us understand how are commercial rents sort of set here in Singapore?
Okay, so to actually answer the question, it's quite a big topic by itself because, you've talked about market forces. Mm-hmm. So the overarching principle is that Singapore is a free market economy, which means the government doesn't intervene in setting of prices for businesses. So it's always willing buyer, willing seller, and in this case, willing landlord, willing tenant, because market forces have to be allowed to have a free play without being artificially supported by the government. So that's always how Singapore has been operating as an economy, right?
So in other words, it's free for all.
Yeah.
Basically, it's demand, supply, market
Correct.
Forces.
Because
work
ultimately,
own.
If you price yourself off of the markets, you know, the consumers have a choice to move on to somebody else who would charge them a better price that they can accept. So it's always based on demand and supply.
Yeah, so I'm also curious to know then, what are some of the reasons for jacking up the rent? I mean, for instance, if let's say you have an MRT, right, close to your premises, okay, you jack up their rent. I mean, so what are some of the main considerations?
So maybe I just continue there because with that principle of a free market economy, we can then dive deeper into the issue of rents by looking at the retail spaces that we have in Singapore. So on one spectrum, we have the retail malls that are owned by the large corporate institutions.
Like the REITs.
Your REITs, your private funds, right? And they have a retail strategy to execute because when they purchase like an asset, they come up with a retail concept based on a certain positioning, based on a certain retail trade mix, and with that execution they can then control or better present that consumer experience to the shoppers that come into the mall. So based on that, they will have a set of rentals that they need to achieve in order to hit certain targets that they have promised shareholders.
Okay.
So then that's for the retail malls.
That's like an Ion Orchard,
that's
for example,
Ion
right?
Orchard.
I'm sure they want to, like
Vivo
the top
City
malls we know are the more designer brands.
Correct.
And they probably pay a different rental from the guys in the basement.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct, exactly. And it's actually quite an art in itself because they have 20,000 square feet spaces.
Yeah.
They have 200 square feet spaces. Mm-hmm. They are leased to different types of tenants, like supermarkets will pay anchor tenant prices because that's just the concept of occupancy cost ratio. It's a metric that is tracked by these corporate landlords.
Okay.
And different trade categories have different occupancy cost thresholds.
But is it an issue then? Because, I was at Parkway recently, haven't been there in a few months, and then next thing I know, Marks & Spencer has closed down.
Yeah.
And then when I was at, United Square, for instance, this bakery that I would go to, like, open one day, and next day it's all boarded up. Shut.
Wow.
Yeah, so, perhaps share with us, what is your experience, when it comes to these,
I think when, Ethan was saying that we have a free market economy in Singapore, I agree and disagree. I don't think that there exists a totally free market in any country for any sector of business, certainly not in Singapore. I would say that the ideal situation is what's the right balance between free market portion and so-called a more managed or controlled portion. I give you a very simple example, of residential or HDB, right? Our residential market is not entirely free market. And in fact, 80% of Singaporeans stay in government-owned housing, right?
Right.
So it is for those reasons and that we are also starting to apply to commercial leases to say, look, is there room for a bit more control, social-minded objective
okay.
towards some segments of our economy.
But one would argue that with our HDB flats, which are sort of government-built, you know, so since they kind of own it, they can, you know, regulate the prices and control how much it goes. Whereas with a shopping centre, I mean, if it's owned by someone else, and you're saying there is some kind of regulation, or there isn't now and it needs to be?
Yeah, I've been saying that there isn't enough regulation now in a market that is trending or clearly in a oligopolistic situation.
Okay.
Where there is very little or there's insufficient supply and a lot of demand. Right.
So in other words, you're saying it is the landlord that holds the cards. They you know, and it surprises me actually that why is it that you will see some shops, right, in these malls or you know, suburban malls, shop houses, like it's empty for months. Mm. You know, when clearly I'm thinking, you know, it's a landlord because, you know, he doesn't have any tenants or he's just holding, waiting for the next person who's willing to pay.
That's very interesting. In fact, that is one of the measures that we are proposing. Which is very similar, again, to my reference to the residential market, where we are saying that there should be some form of regulation or penalties or incentives that prevent vacant units that are vacant for too long. And the same principle has actually been applied to our residential market.
So charge for an empty unit, charge for a vacant unit.
Our residential private property developers today will be penalized with additional taxes if they are not able to sell their developments within a certain time period. And that is very well understood, very well practiced, and good for the market because it prevents this thing called price or market price manipulation.
Mm. So is that something you agree, Ethan?
Yeah.
Well, I will hold firm to my position that because residential and commercial spaces are very different, right? Residential really impacts on the livelihoods of like people who really need a space to stay, like a roof over the, you know, their heads. Whereas commercial is really business enterprise, and for that reason, if it's artificially propped up, prices are artificially propped up by the government, it might lead to unintended consequences.
Right.
This could damage Singapore's reputation as a free economy, which means foreign direct investments to Singapore might decrease, and also less spending on upkeeping our commercial buildings because it's just not profitable anymore.
But then there is a sense that then, you know, like you go to a mall or you go to certain areas, you know, you just stand it, you see all the big name shops and the brands. And what about, let's say, you know, a 25-year-old who, you know, wants to sell something that he, you know, he crafts, for instance, or she crafts, and whether it's a heritage element to it or a local element with it, we should sort of support businesses like that, you know, like
that's what we're asking. Yeah, I mean, should we?
So earlier on, I mentioned about how the large corporate retail landlords will have this thing called a retail concept where they're trying to execute. And it's usually a mixture of like popular concepts, like independent concepts, a little bit more interesting things like people want to see that they don't usually see in other, you know, other malls. So in order to do that, they know that they have to play with the mix a little bit in terms of the rental structure, right? How to incentivize more of such unique concepts to come in.
So are you saying it already exists? So for example, I'm a big mall. I got luxury brands. I've got my supermarket. But I want to have these unique shops like a leather binding or some kind of unique thing. So I will cater for that and probably give them a lower rent? I've anticipated that and therefore, Terrence saying no.
I would say that for malls that have a certain retail strategy that they want to execute, and then they will know that they have to reduce rents for certain categories of trades that they want to attract into the malls.
I think to be fair, many of the big landlords do try to do what Ethan is calling out, which is to give a certain flex and allowance for local businesses. But as we have also spoken, by and large, all of our biggest landlords are REITs, right? And they're bound by very, very clear and simple commercial expectations and profit expectations, right?
Well, because they're all the dividend payouts as well, right? That they have to give, deliver to their stakeholders.
But similarly, I would say on the one side, REITs are, you know, subject to a lot of so-called expectations on dividend payouts. I would say that that's just on a bigger scale of what smaller businesses are also supposed to do. Smaller businesses are also to deliver a certain payout and dividend in order for the business owners to feel like they can survive.
So there's nothing wrong with what they're doing.
What I would say is that when there is a free market where there is low supply, mm-hmm. few big suppliers, like few big landlords, a lot of demand from both local and foreign players, F&B or retail. When you have free market play in that situation, prices will go up.
Okay.
The debate isn't whether, landlords are evil or bad. I'm not here to say landlords are evil or bad at all, because landlords are by nature and by setup profit-minded and profit Correct. Maximization. There's nothing wrong with that. If I'm a landlord and if I can command a higher rental yeah. for my unit...
Of course, you would, right? If I can rent it for 10,000 instead of 8,000, why would I settle for 8,000?
Right. So ultimately, I agree, okay. right? Ultimately, if we think about this deep enough, it is actually a demand and supply issue. And it is also partially some regulation issue.
Are you saying that we have come to a point where it's just gone out of control and we need to rein
in? Is it out of control?
I don't think it's out of control. I think that what we have really addressed on so far is that there is a sector of the retail market that's owned by the large corporate institutions, the REITs, the funds. We also have other kinds of retail spaces in Singapore yeah. that are owned by either strata landlords. These are your individual shop owners that purchase a certain shop lot. They can't really command as high a rental as the retail malls because they can't execute that retail concept mm-hmm. because they cannot control who the neighbors are going to, what the neighbors going to rent out their shops
like a
for.
One-man show versus,
That's
you know,
right. I mean, you cannot stop like somebody who buys a shop lot to operate their own business, whether they sell shower curtains or like Persian carpets. You can't control that trade mix. So they can't command those kind of rents. Then at the end of the spectrum, we have public-owned commercial spaces. Yeah. These are your public landlords like HDB, NParks, your community clubs, your hospitals, your public buildings, basically, that do not have profit maximization as a main agenda.
But how do you say to some shops, right? Like, I mean, like for patisserie, for instance, you know, landlord decides to jack up because it's a takeover. It's a new landlord that comes in, you know, jack up the rental more than 50%. And she's comparing with her neighbors, right? Yeah, they're paying just, you know, maybe half or a quarter of that. And then, you know, obviously is that
But the
fair?
Landlord is also saying, well, this is what I want. If you can't, then you can go shop elsewhere, right? Which is also fair to a certain extent.
So I think a further detail to that case, I think there were follow-up press reports about that whole area.
Yeah.
And it is complicated in the sense that apparently, if I remember correctly, her landlord was a new landlord. That means the new landlord bought over from the old landlord mm-hmm. at a higher price, right? And so therefore, such commercial rentals are also linked to the general property, residential and commercial property prices in Singapore that has been going up, right. that has gone up mm-hmm. over the years.
So is there such a thing as a fair price? Because the guy may say, well, my mortgage is $10,000 a month, so I need to bring in at least that
I'll try
amount,
to
right?
answer the question. actually, within our community, let's say for those of us who have been doing this business from 15, 20 years ago, there is a benchmark of rent occupancy price ratio of about 15%. That means if your shop sales is 10,000 a month, right? A good healthy ratio of rent to 10,000 is 15% of that, which is 1,005.
Okay.
Right? Today, we are seeing rent ratios from healthier range is 20% to unhealthy range is about 50% or more. So based on our observation from fellow business owners, small business owners especially, the occupancy cost has dramatically increased for us over the past.
But do we know? Is there a list that tells us who's paying what and how much they're paying?
Oh, no. There isn't data.
So do you think that data should be transparent?
That's something I've been advocating for a while. Because again, I refer back to what we've done for our residential units. You know, today there is full data transparency. You can almost identify which floor of which condo was the last transacted price. And I would argue that such transparency measures has helped the market has helped both developers and buyers. And I would strongly advocate something similar for our sector of the market, although there are quite a lot of technical difficulties because these are rentals. Not,
these are
purchases.
Leases and not sales. Like, because if it's a sale, then you can caveat because you have an interest in the property that you have purchased. But once it's a lease, especially if it's a private lease held by a private landlord, then these are kind of like, it can be seen like in the likes of like a trade secret because that's how they price their shops in order to be competitive with their
But I would argue that even for sale of residential units, you know, if the developers can also argue that their pricing strategy is a trade secret, right? And but after they were compelled to reveal such things but because of property caveat lodges, it's actually turned out to be the opposite. I think it's actually helped create a better, more vibrant, more transparent market. Even though if you have let the private property developers be on their own, they would never have chosen to reveal it in the first place.
What are some of the countries, other countries are doing, you see, that you think their rental model will work in Singapore?
We have come across countries like Sweden, Germany, Japan. So what, for example, Sweden does is that I think they have a policy which tells landlords and tenants to peg their rental renewal increases based on inflation as measured by CPI, Consumer Price Index.
So in other words, if inflation increases by 4%, I can increase by 4%.
Right.
And what about pegging it to the revenue of the business itself?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a brilliant example. So that's a brilliant idea.
Brilliant.
That has also been something that we have been advocating for, which is instead of high fixed rental,
right,
that there is more equal skin in the game.
Like a profit sharing model.
Between landlords and tenants, where if business do well, if the landlords work with and help the tenants grow their business, their rent actually increase because they're receiving their rent as a percentage of business.
Correct.
But during tough times, for example, COVID, when business go down significantly or collapse, then landlords share the burden together with tenants. But so that's a
brilliant
idea.
Is that something you agree with?
I do agree with that, actually. Yes, you're right, I got to tell you. Yes, I think this is called the concept of turnover rent, which is something that I think we've been trying to also...
So we have common ground.
Yeah. We're also trying to tell our landlords, you know, that this is something to if the tenant is unable to pay you the kind of rental that you want, then please consider a turnover rent component where, like what Terrence has mentioned, a bit of skin in the game, helping to drive traffic to the mall, drive traffic to the shop.
Because it's a win-win kind of situation.
Totally.
Yeah. So why isn't it happening more often? Is it a factor of just the tenant negotiating with the landlord?
Because it's hard to project earnings based on something that's variable. So for REITs, they do have to maintain a certain kind of earnings expectations because they have to declare some of these things to the analysts every quarter. So it's hard to judge how things are going to happen if you know that your rents are always changing, fluctuating from month to month.
So in other words, there's no need for me to take the risk. I don't really care about your business. I'll charge you $5,000 a month. Whether you make it or not, you just pay me $5,000. That way I know my books are going to turn out a certain way.
I think over the years, especially after the code of conduct has been introduced and mandated into law, I think more landlords have been trying to incorporate a certain kind of percentage rent into their structure and also to be fairer, like in the spirit of transparency, because they know that if they don't do something like that, it will be harder to attract tenants. And especially with the climate now of high turnovers and churn within especially the F&B industry, this is something definitely I think will be more, we will probably see more of these coming along.
I mean, like Singapore, I mean, we've always prided ourselves as a, you know, free market economy. So, but if the government intervenes, right, in some form, wouldn't that then sort of, you know, disrupt things?
Right. So the government doesn't come in to intervene and say that you have to set your rents at this rate because they can't manipulate the pricing, right, because it's free market economy. What they have done is actually to put in place certain measures. For example, because... Like HDB is the largest public landlord for commercial spaces in Singapore, right? They are the and a lot of spaces that HDB owns, they have schemes to help to nurture like local businesses and like social enterprises, for example. So for like young businesses, they have this enhanced entrepreneur scheme that was introduced in 2018, where young and innovative businesses can actually enjoy 10% discount off the rent rates for HDB spaces that they can allocate to them.
Okay.
Then for social enterprises, they have the social enterprise policy where recognized social enterprises under the Singapore Centre for Social Enterprises can get direct allocation from HDB spaces for their work at a significant discount of 30%.
In fact, many of them can apply for certain funding as well, certain schemes to help, you know. So then it's the question of, so if you know what you want to do and you know where it fits in, then you choose the right partner, you choose the right landlord. Don't go into an Ion Orchard where you know you're going to be hit with 10K a month.
Correct.
You know?
And with that free market forces in play, people will start to gravitate towards public sector spaces, which means the private sector, if you want to attract people into your malls, you have to price your rents better.
So it's fair, right, Terrence? I mean, in that sense.
But would that mean then the malls will all start looking very, very similar? Yeah, we know these
and
shops are going to be here. And
all over the world. You visit another country, the same big brands are there.
Yeah, so if you want something more niche, like, you know, go to
the HDB in Tokyo Town Center.
True and not true. True and not true. To be fair, the government landlords have been very social minded and have created a lot of pathways for local businesses to go. They do cater for it. But my proposition is that is the pathway for entrepreneurship in these sectors, F&B, retail, only through HDB, right? Is there room for many examples? Floor partitions is one of them. Many examples to play outside of HDB and still contribute to vibrancy and local flavor.
Yeah.
Malls that become too septic, become too photocopy of each other, is ultimately no good for the whole vibrancy and image of Singapore as a former destination for wine, dine and shop, which we have lost. And I think that once we completely lose that vibrancy and the image, and that cannot just be held up by HDB properties, right? Singapore is a poorer for that. I think that's my main point.
Okay.
So I think what the government has also evolved to for the in the allocation of like public commercial spaces for private tender is to introduce a progressive model in allocation using the price quality model instead of traditionally it's a price, highest price will win, right?
Okay.
When they bid for a piece of land or a project. But recently I think that there was a project that was done with the former Nan Chiau High School.
Okay.
Which was allocated using this model. This was a pilot project done by the Singapore Land Authority where they used this price quality model instead to evaluate the proposals that were received based on the concept quality, the community impact, as well as sustainability. So now you see it as New Baru. So this is a place where it's supposed to nurture, like, build vibrant communities being able to maintain that kind of like a social, cultural value because it's heritage site.
So the government regulation sort of dictated to a certain extent the kind of usage, but it didn't interfere with the price.
That's right.
It basically when it tendered, it gave to these guys for a certain price.
That's right.
But they got to go figure out how much they're going to charge their tenants,
I think yes and no, right? I love the example of New Baru, and I'm glad you brought it up. And we are actually also advocating and hoping that the government will take that and expand that in a bigger way, because it goes back to addressing the demand and supply problem. And when you free up enough good quality supply, it does help relieve the overall cost pressures on the other prime malls.
Okay.
Right? So in so doing, if SLA, and I believe they were very reasonable in releasing a good plot of land, good area, a good price to the operators of New Baru, that release the price.
I think that's
pressure.
A success model because the few times I've been there, I haven't been able to get into any other restaurants.
Yeah, and no parking, right?
Because and no parking. So
the theory is that if you're evaluated based on your concept rather than just the price alone, the idea is that you will pass on the savings to your tenants.
No,
when
and
you
it
bring
also
in
makes
tenants.
Sense because, like Terrence says, I'm an entrepreneur, I've got a shop in Ion, then I find out Otelia has one in New Baru and I find out how much she's paying. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go over there, right? And
we need more supply, more competition.
So I think that we are going in the right direction. The government doesn't intervene in prices, but they create that ecosystem for things to happen in different pockets. Right. So I think that it's a fair system.
So yeah, I definitely look forward to seeing more New Baru equivalent, I suppose. Named after so at least we have more options as well.
New one is called Newer Baru.
Newer Baru.
No, New Mokyo. New Baru is ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, so at the end of the day, it sounds like, you know, we need some interference to help nudge the market in the right direction. And Terence, you're saying transparency is one key factor to helping
price
that,
data right? Transparency, addressing supply, and hopefully some reasonable mitigation on anti-competition or too strong oligopoly, right? Mm. And as has been seen in other markets like Sweden, Germany, Japan.
Yeah. Ethan?
Well, there was one experience that I think it was quite interesting. You know, the French have this thing where the tenants enter into a long lease with the landlord on a 3+3+3 year kind of lease. So they sign a 9-year lease straight up front, and the bail system allows them to bail out at the end of every 3 years. So it was quite cool. I mean, they've introduced it in the 1950s,
and it still exists.
Yeah. Okay, so it gives a way out for the tenant to actually exit the lease at certain intervals while at the same time locking in preferential rates.
That's a great idea.
In 9 years.
But the landlord's going to say, what's in it for me, man?
The landlords will hate it. So.
Yeah. But we don't see that being practiced at all.
Yeah, but no, if I'm a landlord, I wouldn't sign up for it. Right. It doesn't make sense.
Is that legislation or part of the practice?
It's a legislation. But like I said, what works for other countries may not work for Singapore. Yeah. What Singapore has done, I think, and Terence was a big part of that, was when they introduced the code of conduct, is to create we don't fix your rents, but we tell you the rules under which you negotiate your rents must be in this kind of format.
Create the right environment
that's right.
For fair tenancy.
It must be fair, it must be transparent. You cannot cheat this guy, you cannot cheat that guy.
Yeah. But I guess government can help nudge, you know, sort of sometimes when it gets out of hand to say, hey, exactly. Buddy, you know, I don't think you should be doing so much of that.
Exactly.
But otherwise, it is, you know, every man for himself to a large extent.
To a large extent.
Yeah, so that bakery you want to open, I think you better think twice. A lot of home bakers now, that's the way to go,
right?
I have
to learn how to bake, okay?
Start with HDB.
Be fair, there are operators who are also successful. It's just that we seldom hear of them because they don't tell you when they have I've negotiated a good deal with the landlord.
But also because the turnover rate we're seeing is so high. That's right. You know, we're seeing a lot of restaurants, you know, a lot of retail shops, you know, under 2 years and close shop, right?
So actually, the opposite is also true, right? Mm. Where business owners hate to tell people about
how
their failures.
Or their failures,
right?
Yeah.
So, and because in recent 6 months, 12 months, we've seen so much of that. Mm. It is a very clear indication that something's wrong. You know, business owners rarely like to tell the world about their problems.
But yet, you know, we keep seeing all these mala hot pot places opening up and they seem to be around for quite a while. Yeah. So, you know, if there's transparency there, I'll be like, wow, that guy's doing so well. And then, you know, I'll be like, All right, folks, so thanks so much for joining us here on Deep Dive. We do love to hear from you. Anytime you have comments, thoughts on what you've heard, please drop us a note. We would love to hear from you.
And also a big thanks to the team, Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Mohammed Nerfais, Rosli Putte, Hanida Amin, Shaza Dalila, Crispina Robert, and Alison Jenner.
I know, it sounds like a huge team.
Yeah,
but
it's getting longer and longer, though.
I know, it just sounds like, you know. Okay. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
See ya.